Hello, everybody, and welcome to 3-Point Perspective, the podcast about illustration, how to do it, how to make a living at it, and how to make an impact in the world with your art. I'm Jake Parker.
I'm Lee White.
And I'm Will Terry, and all of us are semi-pro illustrators, and we've been
You said that last time, too. Why do you say semi-pro?
Did I?
Yeah.
Because the longer we go, the more we don't know. Have you noticed that in life? The older you get, the more you realize you don't know.
Will must have hit an age milestone.
Nice. We've published a bunch of books. We've worked at a bunch of universities together, and we've worked for all the publishers. So there you go.
So we are total pros to clean that up. We are total pros. Each week we're going to come at you guys with a different topic. We are going to agree and argue and trash each other. And along the way, you are going to learn some fun stuff.
So a little bit of follow-up from last week. We talked a lot about, or not last week, but last episode, we talked a lot about what we're doing as artists this next year, as illustrators, as professionals, covered a lot of things, but we did spend a good portion of it talking about health, because we do feel like health is a good aspect of being able to create. You've got to take care of your main tool to create, and that's your body, right? So Lee, you've been doing yoga?
Yeah.
tell us what happened last night.
Oh man, do I have a story. If we can add this to the embarrassing stories podcast as well, maybe a little addendum. But yeah, so I mentioned last week that I had back problems over the last year, and my chiropractor recommended yoga to start loosening up some of those muscles and clear those nerves.
So you went on Amazon and bought a bunch of yoga pants.
Got a ton of yoga pants. So I signed up for a hot yoga class. Have you taken a hot yoga class?
Hot yoga.
No, but I'm familiar with it.
They have rooms 105 degrees. And if you're not familiar with that, that is hot. They're not lying about the hot. It's pretty hot.
Mentioned that in the text, by the way.
Oh, I didn't?
Sorry. I didn't. Yeah, that makes more sense now.
I heard that in the text. I heard it. I read it.
I don't read the whole.
Yeah. See, you skim and you miss every other word.
You should have made it.
Anyway, so the first one I went to on Sunday, everything was great. It felt really good. Felt very loose afterwards. So I was like, okay, this is my jam.
You have to bring a lot of water with you, right?
Bring a bunch of water. You bring a towel because I mean you are drenched in sweat. I mean you are.
That's just disgustingly
boring sweat. And everyone, it's a disgusting environment. But anyway, so last night I go to do it and I noticed about halfway through the class and I'm struggling, like not, in a way that I was not struggling the first time. I don't know what was going on. It was a later in the day class, but anyway, so I'm struggling and my legs are like sort of shaking or whatever. And I was like, man, I'm feeling a little funny and just like a little bit of dizziness or whatever. So I was like, we got done with this little standing yoga series. I was like, I'm just going to take a quick jump outside. I'm going to reset and come back in, you know, be strong for the rest of the class. I went out into the hallway and about that time, man, I started hearing like a little buzzing sound, sort of like a high pitched kind of sound. I was like, oh, and I started getting confused and I'm like, man, this is weird. And so I was like, I think I need to lie down. So I looked down the hall and that's where the lobby is and it's open. There's nobody in the lobby because everybody's in class, including the teacher. It's like, I'm going to go lie down. So on my way to lie down, I 100% blacked out and crashed through the lobby and knocked over the furniture. I broke a lamp. And so, I mean, I was 100% blacked out. Like I woke up and I'm on my back and there's like four of the people from class, including the teacher, pouring water on me as I'm lying on my back around all this stuff that had fallen.
I'm watching the video in my mind.
Oh, it was I posted it on my Facebook page, but it reminded me of like a bad Chris Farley sketch. Like I can just picture everybody in the yoga class sitting there trying to do their poses, and then they just hear this thunderous crash outside, and I'm just lying down in the middle of all this stuff.
It would have looked like a zombie trying to escape from this hell of a class. You know,
how did you not get a concussion?
I don't know, but today my nose is sort of sore, so I think I may have landed on my nose, but my whole chest and side is bruised from where I took down the reception desk.
Is there video of this? There has
well, that's what me and Will were talking about, that it's a lobby. So I wonder if they do have video. If they do, I will post it because it is probably hilarious.
Now, what about your water bottle?
Oh, this is the best part. So the water bottle, we're looking around for the water bottle because I'm on the ground as well as the lamp and everything else that I hit all on the ground. And so I had this carrying this big water bottle and we couldn't find it anywhere. And we're looking around. Somebody finally says, here it is. It's in a towel hamper. So apparently on the way down,
you made a three-pointer.
Somehow I made a three-pointer. Let the water bottle land in the towel hamper.
You got to get the video.
It was crazy. It was one of the, so I'm not doing, I'm going from hot yoga to not yoga. I'm not going back.
Good one.
Thank you.
Do you know what caused it though? Is there any idea?
I have naturally just like
105 degrees.
Yeah, 105 degree temp will start that. But I have a really low heart rate anyway. Like a super athlete.
Yeah.
Like an Olympic level runner.
Or a sickly person.
Yeah, I know how you feel.
Yeah, my resting heart rate is like 51. And so I think that may have, I don't know. I mean, I have no idea. But it was nuts. I was so embarrassed when I woke up and all these, and they're all around me. And then, you know, and then I just don't know what to do. So I drove home, which was the dumbest decision. Anyway, we should get on to the podcast, but I just thought you'd update you guys for that healthy new year.
to me, the takeaway for, you know, artists listening to this is basically, yes, exercise, but don't go 0 to 60. Like, what if you had just taken a yoga class, a regular yoga class?
No, that's not good enough for me. I need to take the hot yoga, and then I need to be the best at hot yoga.
And then there's going to be cold yoga. And yeah.
I'm into air conditioned yoga now. Is my new class.
Well, actually, I saw there's a guy I follow online, and they do this thing up in like the snowy mountains, wherever there's snow right now.
Hof Wim.
Is that what it is?
That's the guy.
You hike without a shirt on.
Yep, Hof Wim. This would get us way off track, but they're studying his physiology because his blood has more antibodies than almost any human.
Cause he hikes in the cold.
Yeah. He's done marathons. There's really good YouTube video. There's a lot on him, but one where he takes these groups to his retreat and they like sit.
It's in Poland, right?
Yeah. It's in Poland. They sit in, ice water and they jump off of cliffs into water and then they hike in that particular one. They hike the mountain. I think we probably
they can keep it. They can keep it
in just their underwear.
And yeah. The video I saw, they were like wearing boxers, gloves and hiking boots and that was it. And it was like trudging through snow.
Mm-hmm. But the cold therapy is they're studying it and they're saying there are huge benefits. So,
yeah, I mean, it jumpstarts your metabolism, right?
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if it jumpstarts your creativity. So talking about what we're going to do today.
nice segue. I may pass out during this podcast, though. So if you guys don't hear me for a little while.
Stay hydrated, Lee.
I'll be. Wow.
Okay. So, Will, I like the topic that you were telling us for this one. And I'm just going to let you take it away. Tell us what we're talking about today.
I got an email from someone, and I apologize because I broke my rule. My rule is when I go through my email and I get a good idea for a podcast or a YouTube video, I put it in a Google Doc and it's in an organized place. And I must not have on this one because I couldn't find it. But basically, it was just saying, "Hey, I would love to hear you guys talk about a book launch, how to launch a book." And I thought there's several reasons why this is a good topic, and probably the biggest one is I've seen a lot of people launch a book, either self-published or published, and I've seen a lot of people do it wrongly. And I've seen a few people do it really well. And I'm definitely not the poster child for doing it well, but I think it's a good topic for us to talk about. And just to set it up, I think probably the main problem that people have with a book launch is that they work either whether they're an author or whether they're an illustrator or whether they're both author and illustrator. You know, you spend your time learning how to write or you spend your time learning how to illustrate. And that's where our focus is as artists. And most of the people listening to this podcast are probably illustrators or probably, you know, doing visual art. it takes so long to learn how to master one craft that we get myopic. Most people are not good at all the things. And when we talk about a book launch, we're really talking about marketing, right? But the the problem that people that from what I've seen is they think they get their book, you know, they've gone through learning how to illustrate or learning how to write or both, or, and they finally are finished with their book and like, okay, now how do I do a book launch? And the answer to this whole podcast is you're too late. You're too late. The book launch has to start a few years before the book is done. So that's kind of my setup for this. And I would love to hear what you guys think, but I have a whole list of reasons why I think your book launch needs to start a year or two before your book is ever finished. And then if you finish your product, and the other thing about this podcast, this particular topic is this could apply to making a game. It could apply to any project that you want to crowdsource funding, like on Kickstarter or something like that. I think this is, we're all talking about the same themes, the same strategies are going to apply. Yeah. So maybe you're listening to this podcast. You're like, I don't want to write a book, but I'm working on a board game or a card game or a video
game. Everybody's got an idea. I mean, it definitely goes along with what I tell people when I get emails about self-publishing and things, is that it's easy with how broad manufacturing is now and how easy it is to get things manufactured. It's easy to make the product, no matter what the product is. It's hard to sell the product. And that's what I tell people who are self-publishers, is that it's easy to make the book. It's hard to sell the book. So plan on where you're going to sell the book, because that's going to dictate how many copies you get, where do you store the books, how is all that fulfillment going to be done. And that's a whole side of the business that nobody really, most illustrators don't want to deal with, but it's the reality of, is a book successful or not?
Right. Yep. Absolutely. So the idea of a product launch or a book launch is that you're making announcements to the world and saying, hey, this thing that I've done is now finished and it's available and here's how you buy it. Right.
There's a book that I love. That I dip into probably once a year.
I got it last year. So for 2 years now, I've been dipping into it.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
No, it's called Perennial Seller by Ryan Holiday, and it's called The Art of Making and Marketing Work That Lasts. And so the first half of the book is all about making timeless work, more or less. And then the second half is all about marketing. Marketing the book. And there's a quote here that I think is going to go right along with what you're saying here. And this is a quote from Ian McEwan, who was a novelist, or who is a novelist. And he said he once complained lightheartedly about what it was like to go out and market a book after spending all that time creating it. And this is what he says. I feel like the wretched employee of my former self being the happily engaged novelist who now sends me, a kind of brush salesman or double glazing salesman, out on the road to hawk his book. He got all the fun writing it. I'm the poor bastard who has to go sell it. But the thing there, the mindset shift that I had in reading this was, who am I to say? And I used to think this way with books that would go out. I used to think, oh, I got to create it. You know, I got to be the one who did all the creativity. I'm going to let the marketing be handled by other people. I don't sully myself by trying to hawk a book, right? And what I realized was, nope, it's just as much my job to make sure that book is successful and to get it out there as it is to create the thing. So that's my preface. I think that's the thing I wanted to like preface this section of the podcast with. I don't know if, does that go along with kind of where you're going?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of people, let's talk a little bit about, artists who are working through a traditional publisher. Okay. So in this, and for this topic, we can talk about both self-published stuff versus, you know, traditionally published stuff. But for just right now, let's talk about, if you have a publisher a lot of illustrators. And when I first started doing my first children's book was Armadillo Chili back in the early 2000s. And just my impression, you know, no one ever, you know, your editor doesn't sit you down and go, okay, here's an overview of what you should be doing as an illustrator after your book is done. They never talk to you about that. Not unless you ask, you know, at least that's been my experience. So in my mind, I was like, well, I have a publisher and, you know, there's an author and obviously the author knows what she's doing and the publisher knows what they're doing. And I got an editor and an art director and my job, and this is what's in the contract, is that I illustrate the book and then I turn in my drawings and I'm done. And then, like, I think it was two or three books in, I'm talking to my editor and I don't know what was the catalyst for the conversation, but it went to marketing. It went to like, what are your plans kind of a thing, asking me, what are my plans for this book kind of thing. And I was puzzled, like, you know, and she's like, well, you know, like, are you going to do anything, you know, to launch your book?
But that's my job.
Yeah. Right. Right. Like, what are you doing kind of a thing? And it might've been, you know what, actually, I think it was my author. It was Mary. Yeah. It was Helen Kedeman on Armadillo Chili. And we did like four different books together. We ended up doing, so like on the third or fourth book, she was like, well, so do you have any school visits planned? Cause I mean, she benefits too if the book does well. Right.
Right.
And I didn't know anything about anything. And she's like, well, and she was really nice. She was like, well, you could do this. And she had all these ideas. And I was like, and it just opened up my mind. Like, oh, I didn't realize that this was a thing. Right. And then shortly thereafter, I have a mutual friend of Brian Lee's, he's a famous children's book illustrator who did Bats in the Beach, Bats in the Library, that whole Bats book series. And our mutual friend told me his story, which I'm not sure if I've shared on this podcast before, but I'll go through it briefly. he had been illustrating other authors' books through traditional publishing. So he would get an assignment, he would illustrate the book, and then the book would be released and it would sell 5,000 to 10,000 copies and then it would be remaindered. And his second book, same thing, third book, about the fourth or fifth book, he and his wife had a crucial conversation about how, you know, I'm not making that much money as a children's book illustrator. Should I continue? Should I, you know, because he was getting his advances, but it, you know, he's working really hard on these books, but it wasn't really paying off. Then he wrote Bats on the Beach, and they basically decided, he and his wife, to take matters into their own hands with marketing and say, instead of just releasing a book to the world and hoping that in some magical realm it becomes popular and sells, you know, 50 to 100,000 copies or more, what can we do to, you know, make, you know, to control it, to control the marketing of it and get more eyes on it, get more attention. Anyway, I don't know if you can even long story short this, but what they did was they went to, they went to do a book signing because so like, I think if you asked anybody off the street, like, hey, if you had a book, right? If you wrote a book and it got published, what would be the thing that you should do to market it? And I think almost anybody that you stop on the street would say, well, I think you do a book signing, don't you? Like magically doing, just announcing that you're having a book signing is what's going to, right? And so that's what they did. And they went to Barnes & Noble and they said, okay, we got this book and we want you to order a bunch of copies. And one thing that you'll learn, because I've done this, is authors and illustrators, because that's a popular idea, Barnes & Noble gets hit and local bookstores get hit, you know, by illustrators and authors saying this all the time. Like, I've got a new book out, will you order it? And I'd like to schedule and come in. And they have a communications, a CR manager that you go in and you can schedule and they'll set up a table in the back of the store and you can sell two copies of your book, you know. and that's typically what happens, because people think that, for some reason in our minds, if we're there signing, that random people walking along will go, oh, this must be a famous author illustrator. I must get a book from them because this is my opportunity and it's going to evaporate if I don't buy the book right then and there. And what really in reality people do is go, look at that sad person over there not signing any books. I need to stay as far away from them as possible. Right. And so Brian and his wife went and did their first couple of book signings, and that's what they went through. And they're like, this isn't working. So they, and you can find pictures of this if you Google Brian Lee's and Batmobile or Bat Car or something, because his book was Bats on the Beach. He took the Yakima or the Thule rocket box on top of the car and turned it into a bat body, and actually made wings that attached to the side of the car, put graphics on his Jeep, and pulled, and then. So he turned his car into a driving advertisement.
You guys have to Google that if you haven't seen it and you're near a computer and listening. That's how you spell his last name is Lies.
It looks like lies, but it's Lees.
It is incredible.
Yeah, and so what they did was perfect. They decided that they would ask for forgiveness rather than permission. They drove their Jeep up onto the sidewalk of Barnes & Noble in front of the store. And put it there like, yeah, this is happening. This is a big event. Look at this.
Right.
And then they went in and they set up the table, and then they without asking, they took the table out to the front of the store and put it out on the sidewalk by the Jeep with the Batmobile that they had made. And then they had friends at least one signing go along in the parking lot with books and do a little guerrilla marketing where they had their friends pretend that they just got their book signed by the famous Brian Lees. And they would tell people in the parking lot as they were walking back to their car, supposedly, hey, you better go get a book while they last, kind of a thing, you know, and I just got this one signed, you know.
Oh, that's genius.
And then they did that a few times. And, you know, and the thing is, I really believe that you create your own luck. I believe that, you know, if you're out working hard, it's inspiring. And the right person happened along at the right time. And it was a personality from NPR who happened to be walking into that Barnes & Noble, saw what was happening with the guerrilla marketing, sniffed it out, and thought, this is really funny that they're, you know, they're like, this is someone who's really being proactive on marketing. I got to know more. Ended up having Brian on his show, and this is over, I believe, over a 6 month period. So I'm accelerating through this. They did a lot of book signings like this up and down the Eastern Seaboard of the U.S.
Yeah,
but he got on NPR, and then his book became a New York Times bestseller, and really put him on the map as far as you know, famous illustrators, to where, you know. It really just kind of rocket launched his career, and made him a household name in children's books.
He's smart. What I'm seeing from him is he's kind of just taking the whole thing. There's no written rules for all this stuff, and he's kind of writing his own. You know, he's making his own path. If you go to this, I just pulled up this. I Googled his car, but then started clicking on some links. He also made a giant. I mean, like probably 6 foot wide. Book to read there, you know, when he's at readings and all the kids are gathered around. Mm-hmm. Well, if you've ever been to one of those things, most people have at least seen that. You're holding the actual book, and that's only typically an 8x10 image, right. And then it's a spread, so it's this tiny thing. You're trying to, you know, read the text upside down. His book is like 6 feet wide that he's reading to the kids.
What's his name again? Brian
Lees, L-I-E-S.
I'm going to text you guys this picture because it's genius. And it just tells me that he's like, hey, you know what? We're reading for all these people. I need something at least big enough to where people can see what I'm actually doing.
It's really smart. Giant book.
Yeah.
I can't get it to copy.
The other thing too, looking at his art, like he's a great illustrator too. So, I see this on Google Images. I see the giant book.
Okay, yeah. So smart.
It's so smart. He's a genius. You know, there's like a saying where I'd rather have, instead of having like a brilliant product and no way to market it, I'd rather have a bad product and a brilliant marketer or brilliant marketing tactics.
Yeah.
And in this case, he's got like a combination of both. He's got
a really cool book, but then he's like this genius huckster, you know,
yeah,
going behind it.
The other thing to remember when you're thinking about marketing is people want to buy what they're told to buy. They don't want to hear it that way, but we do. We want to buy what we're told to buy. So in other words, you know, there's a movie out right now called Knives Out. It's been out for a little while. Have either of you guys seen that?
No, but I heard it was good.
Right. And so we all ask each other, have you seen this movie? Have you seen this movie? You know, it's 97% on Rotten Tomatoes or something. And it's got a good audience score and a good critic score. Mm-hmm. But that's what we want. We don't want to waste our time and money on something dumb. You know, so we
did you like that? Did you like that director's last movie, the one before Knives Out?
Which one was that?
Last Jedi.
Oh yeah, no,
I didn't. Yeah, you were a big fan of that one. Sorry, I totally threw you off. Wow. There.
That was like a lot, Jake. I haven't seen it actually yet. The Knives Out.
Yeah. Oh, you haven't.
No, we were going to see it last weekend. But my point is that we want lists. We want to be told what's good, and that's where you know, people are listening to the NPR interview of Brian when he's talking about this book. They want to. They hear that they've got this cool book. There's awareness, but also, if NPR vouches for it, I'm good. You know. You know, it's got to be good if it's on there. So, you know, so
just tell me what to do and I'll, you know, just tell me what to buy and I'll go buy it.
So the idea of releasing a book and having it in the bookstore or having a few copies in the bookstore and expecting people to walk by it and see it and buy it just because the cover looks nice. I mean, you'll get some sales from that, but typically people go to the bookstore looking for particular books. And why do they go looking? And that's what we're talking about on this podcast, and I've got a lot of ideas on things that you can and should do, things that have worked for other people. But the first one I really wanted to talk about was that book signing, because just know this, that if you ever go to do a book signing, you just call up Barnes & Noble and you say you want to do it, they'll do it for you, and you will be sad if you don't do your homework and you don't take matters into your own hands and have a game plan. So Brian has probably done the best children's book signing I've ever heard of. But there, I would say this, that in my game plan for launching a book, and I have a book that I'm working on right now that I'm going to be doing a lot of these things for this spring or late winter. I'm already started on it, but is first create a timeline. So create a schedule where you're going to, you know, and this is, again, start a year or two out. And the first thing on my...
Wait, before you get into your list, can I interject something?
Yeah.
It's a question I have. It's the wrench into this whole thing, this whole system that I've always had. And that is, whenever I get done with a book, it doesn't matter whether I want to do all this stuff and make my car into a bat car and all this stuff. I need to move on so I can actually pay my bills. And so I'm thinking of people like me in my early stage of my career or people in their early stages where they've just completed a book. They're getting on the low end of the advanced scale. And you guys have heard us talk about that scale in different podcasts and the different stages of your career. So you just made $8,000 and you just spent 6 months. You made $8,000, but you spent 6 months making this book. You got to move on to the next thing to start making some money. You can't just be like, okay, I'm going to drive up and do a book signing at all these different cities. And that's for free. Your publisher is not paying for that. I really want to make that clear because that is a unique situation. I've done 27 books and I've never had a publisher pay except for just a few single events send me anywhere. And I didn't get paid profit. I just got like a hotel night someplace that they're doing a book signing or something. Mm-hmm. I know, Jake, you've done a more organized tour. I don't think Will and I have done that. But I just don't know how in the world I would schedule one of these things when I need to move on to the next project.
That's a great point. And I wish I had thought of this because it's a great – no, it really is. It's a great thing to talk about. So let's do numbers. Because what I hear you talking about is you're debating the gamble between – doing book after book after book, right? And not spending time marketing, or doing a book, spending a lot of time marketing, and not having time to work on the next book. Is that what I...
That's yeah, and the real snag there is even if you sell the books, you're not receiving the profit from all those books you're selling at a book signing. The bookstore's making that money. You're not receiving that money. Right. And so you're receiving your 5% royalty, which, by the way, your advance needs to be paid back first.
Right.
So you're still months out.
Right, you're not making any money.
You're making nothing.
And let's say this. I've done two book signings at Barnes & Noble, and this is why I swore off, because you're either famous, super famous, and that will get people in the store to where you'll have a little bit of a line for an hour or two selling books. Mm-hmm. And if you're super famous, you're mostly doing that for either for your ego or because someone at that local store asked you to, and they're a friend and you're helping them out because you don't need the money at that point. Because if an author sells, let's say, 100 books, which is a crazy amount for a book signing, right? And let's say how much does an author illustrator get for a book? $1, $1.50 per book,
right?
If you're lucky.
With their percentage, right? Let's say it's $1, mm-hmm. just to make matters easy. So they made $100 going to that Barnes, right. And I'm like, that's a crazy book signing, right?
And that may not be even in their local city. So
right. So if you and I would say most book signings, if you're a brand new author illustrator, nobody knows about you, and you didn't have a following and you didn't tell people you're going to be at the store, or you just told your family you're going to be there, you might sell 2 or 3 books, right? Is that
pretty fair?
Well, let me add my experience. So I went on a book tour for Little Bot and Sparrow. Love that book. Proud of that book. So super happy to promote it. And what I did was, my publisher was like, yeah, we could send you to, four different bookstores. I think I went to one in Seattle, Portland, and San Francisco, and and they sent me to Texas for the Texas Book Fair, right, in Austin. I think that was it. Anyways, the most attended event was the one in Portland, the one you went to, Lee, right?
And that's why I was attended.
Yeah, everyone heard Lee was coming. No, it was a pretty good turnout, right? Like mm-hmm. that one was good. But I went to one where it was like 10 people maybe. Mm-hmm. And it was mostly people that, I don't know how interested in the book they were, but they were maybe more interested in just seeing me and talking to me and drawing my drawings and stuff like that. Because I did drawing demos at these as well. I don't know that this book tour moved the needle at all as far as selling books. However, the whole time I videotaped everything. I recorded everything, not on tape, but on a little SD card and a camera, right? So I recorded everything digitally on a camera, and I hired a guy to edit. He actually offered his services to me. Just as a sort of like trading exposure with his services as an editor, and also access to me as well. We kind of became friends through this. But he edited all these videos that I took into a vlog, and I posted those videos on my YouTube channel. So it was a way for me to put content out there and for more eyes to see that I am doing a book and putting out a book. And that was a way to get it out there. I still don't know if that moved the needle at all as well. And so I think fundamentally in this day and age, going physical places to sell a product isn't going to work unless you're going to a place where people are there to buy those things. So if you go to like maybe an art show or a Comic-Con and you do it that way, you're probably going to do a better job selling books than showing up at a Barnes & Noble on a Tuesday night.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Because how many people in this, raise your hand listening in podcast land, if you've gone to a Barnes & Noble once last year outside of Christmas.
Right.
Have you? Either of you?
I don't think
last time you set foot in a Barnes & Noble?
I don't even know what Barnes & Noble is anymore. Is that still a bookstore? But I will say, indie bookstores had like a huge resurgence last year. And so there's a bunch of those that are opening up.
I think you might do well. It's not a podcast episode if Lee's phone hasn't gone off at some point.
I'm popular with the spammers.
Apparently. Anyways, indie bookstore might be a little bit better because indie bookstores have like their people that mm-hmm. go, and they're aware of events that are happening there, and they sort of have a community. And that's another thing that I think is important is indie bookstores have a platform where a platform isn't necessarily like they're famous. It's that they have people that are listening to them mm-hmm. and paying attention to them. Nobody goes to Barnes & Noble to like find out what book they should read. They're either finding that online, but people who are affiliated with an indie bookstore are people who buy books, who love going out, who love doing those things. And so those people are probably the ones that are going to want to take your book and tell someone else about it. They're going to want to attend that thing and tell someone else. That said, dialing it back, I still think time is better spent not doing a book tour or doing book signings, but unless you're super creative about it, like all this is thrown out, unless you figure out some creative way to do it, like mm-hmm. you have an inflatable bat inside, you know, something that gets people talking and sharing. But I think you're better off putting those efforts into building your own personal platform and your own personal fan base. And yes, that does start 2 years, 3 years before you launch a book. Mm-hmm. Is building this own this platform where people know you, they trust you, and there's a thing I always tell myself is that making is marketing. So the whole time you're making the book, you're showing people what you're working on and you're talking about it. That is marketing for this thing that is eventually going to come out. Don't be secretive about it. Share as much as your publisher will allow you to share, or if it's a self project, share as much of it as you can. Even if you share every single page online, people just want easiness. Mm-hmm. They're not going to want to go through and look through all your posts to see the work that you're creating. And that is just not the same experience as ordering the book, having it all in one place. So share your stuff, build that platform, build a list of people, an email list, all of these sort of things where you have ownership of. And I think that's where your efforts are best.
Yeah, you can reach a much broader audience. I should add that even though I've never done it, my understanding of how people actually get around the finance part of doing a tour is they schedule school visits in conjunction with bookstore visits. So the bookstore visits are sort of the freebie throwaway, mm-hmm. whereas the school visit is how they actually make money. And most authors and creators make money that way. I've just never done that.
I want to hack into that because I have two good examples of that. And I also want to circle back to something we left unresolved, which was that Lee, you said, let's go back to the idea of should I illustrate book after book or should I illustrate a book and then market it?
Right.
Okay. Because let's look at some numbers. If you get a typical advance from a major publisher for a beginner is around $10,000 for the illustrator. So if you're asked to illustrate a book, you're going to be offered somewhere on
$8,000.
And that's, you know, that could take you, depending on your style, it could take you a month to 6 months, let's say, to illustrate that. So it's not a lot of money. And so let's say it takes you 3 months, and let's say by some miracle you can illustrate 4 books a year. So that's you're working full time. That's $40,000 gross a year. You do 4 books in a year. And that's a lot. Most people don't do that many, right? Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's a ton. That's Lee White numbers.
Right. So the gamble is, if I do marketing like Brian did, and I've got another story that I think is really valuable. If I invest my time in marketing efforts, can I increase my sales to, let's say, 100,000 sales? If I sell 100,000 books, I'm going to make $100,000 on that one book. So that's, I think, the gamble. Now, there's no guarantee, right? So you could illustrate the book, make your 10,000, spend, you know, the next 6 months trying to market it and only sell 20,000 copies. And then you're wishing you hadn't spent the time marketing. But if you sell 50 to 100,000 copies, it can more than make up for the time not spent making the next book at that time. And I think that's where a lot of artists and a lot of authors have been, that are the household names, that are the super successful, have gotten to that point where they can make one book a year, if that. Some make fewer than one book a year, you know, and but they spend the time in between really selling that book.
They already have the name brand recommendation. I think it's a faulty argument to think that you can battle for 6 months a year and supplement your income with a marketing effort. If you're an unknown or even relatively, you know, early to mid career, I don't think, because that whole time, don't forget, you're going to have expenses. It's not just, not just living expenses, but expenses with the marketing effort. So say you make $20,000 from the marketing. Well, if you spent $10,000 or $12,000 or $15,000 to go city and do all this stuff, advertising the events or whatever, you're at a net gain of
$5,000.
You've
got to have faith, Lee.
I have no faith.
And that's the thing. That's the hard thing to sell to, the hard thing. And I mean, this is a great point, because there are no guarantees. But you know, you've heard that where there's little risk, there's little reward. You know, that a lot of entrepreneurs that are super successful can pinpoint it back to where they really took a risk and really took a gamble and it paid off. Then there's people that are probably homeless that are like, man, I really risked that.
I did the risk. But the numbers are not on your, is my point. If you go that route.
Yeah, I would agree. You have to have something, some special things happen. Maybe the middle ground is that, you know, wealth is made in your spare time. You know, people that think that they can work 8 hours a day and become successful as an entrepreneur are probably kidding themselves, because in reality, you know, people that really get ahead tend to spend every waking extra minute on their dream. So maybe there's a happy medium where you are working on your next book. Two examples that I have, well, we're not going to get through this whole thing. You guys were worried that this one wouldn't take long enough. There's so much. This could have been two actual podcast, but
well, especially when you said, hey, you guys come up with a list of things to talk about, and you're taking all our time.
I know. Okay, a couple quick examples. David Bedricki, don't try to spell his last name. I actually did an interview with him on my YouTube channel a while back.
We'll have it in the show notes if you guys want to look it up.
But he, and you mentioned this, Lee, about doing school visits. So one of the things that he does, rather than spend, you know, rather than think about like all of it's on this book launch, he's constantly launching his books. So he schedules his time. His wife helps him with this. She's his manager basically. And he is booked into school visits from the beginning of the year to the end of the year. He has been doing this for many, many years. He writes and illustrates his own stories. And he is one, he makes a ton of money from the school visits themselves. But every time he does a school visit, he has order forms. He has ways for them to buy his books. He's talking about the book. The kids go home. They're like, I want this book. And so the parents buy the book. So his publishers love him because he's guaranteed them a certain number of sales, because it's basically cause and effect at this point. He's in the school selling his books. So his books are going to pay for themselves. The publishers don't have any risk on publishing his next book because every single one of them are profitable. Another guy who does that is Jerry Pallotta. I actually illustrated his Santa Pups book, and he's friends with David, and that's what he does. The publisher Scholastic loves him. Whenever he writes a book, it's going to get published because he's bringing sales to the publisher. It's just a, you know, there's no risk for them at all.
And one thing I'd like to add right there, just something that you just sparked in my head. Do you guys think there's an advantage to publishing with anything with Scholastic because of how integrated the Scholastic book fairs are within the schools?
Scholastic buys books from other publishers too to put in those book fairs. But
here's the problem.
They're mostly Scholastic.
Yeah.
With the school fairs, though, those books, you make such a smaller royalty off of those books. Mm-hmm. So it's like, yeah, you're going to sell, you know, an extra 10,000 copies through the school fairs, but you're also getting 1-3%, you know, from that instead of your usual 6 to 10. Mm-hmm.
We should talk about that just real quick. You don't just get a set amount, and that's what Jake's kind of highlighting there. When you sell a book, the book goes through all kinds of different phases, from its initial launch all the way to being remaindered, which we haven't really even talked about what that means. But you know, if it gets sold to a book club or a like Scholastic, I guess, or there's many book clubs that it could get sold for. Yeah, you get a fraction of what you normally get as if somebody bought it off Amazon or bought it on at a physical bookstore. And there's all these different scenarios where you make less and less and less, all the way to the point where when a book gets remaindered, it's just basically what remaindered means is the publisher's sort of done with the book and the market is done with the book. And now it's just on deep discount because they just don't want to store it at a mm-hmm. warehouse. So you get those, you know, 50-cent books on Amazon. It costs more to ship it than it does to actually pay for the book.
Right.
And the book's done and you're not getting anything. And that's why I'm a big advocate of self-publishing, because the book never gets remaindered. And that remaindered period is happening faster and faster and faster within the publishing industry.
Mm-hmm.
There's not.
I'm
a
in a
time.
Position now where, I have two Missile Mouse books that I've created. These are graphic novels. They each took a year to make. Missile Mouse book one has sold over 100,000 copies, and it's now on a second printing. And the second printing is actually like cheaper paper. It's not as good quality, but it's still fine. However, the second book is out of print. I guess its numbers didn't cause the publisher to have faith in it to do a second printing. So it's out of print. I don't have control over it. I can't go do a printing. I'm telling my agent, hey, can I buy this book back? You know, can I?
Because I had a book that's out of print and the rights reverted back.
Yeah. So I want to look into that, because I would love to kickstart a Missile Mouse book and just sell those copies myself, you know, with a new cover or something like that. I would never have sold over 100,000 copies on my own. I needed a publisher to do that, but they do. Like I am also don't have control over the book as well. So there's some of these things that you have to take into account. Do you want to have control? Do you want to be able to sort of chart your own course? Do you want to put all your faith into the publisher? But that said, I remember when these books came out, I was back in that mindset where publishers taking all this money to, you know, I only get 10%, so the publisher's taking 90%. They can spend that money on marketing that book and do whatever they want. And I didn't do much to really market the stuff when the books came out. And I think that was a huge mistake. I could have done so much more, I think, than what I did.
Do you think those sales that you're talking about there, Jake, do you think that contributed to your $64 million net worth?
Oh my gosh. Okay. Real quick. Just quick tangent. Some Chinese bot, I don't know what it is. I think they're scouring Wikipedia, and they're also scouring like findthisperson.com, you know, where you could type in a name and figure out their address and stuff or whatever. And they're combining those, and some bot made a page on celebrity, what's it called? Celebrity net worth or something like that. And there's a Jake Parker page, and it says that my net worth is $64 million.
That's low, isn't it?
So good.
No. It's about dead on. And it says Jake Parker is an illustrator and has made his money from illustration. If that was the case, I think there'd be a lot more people choosing illustration as a path instead of doctors, lawyers. Why would you submit yourself to all of that stress and hard work when you could pass the time sketching on your iPad all day long. Wow. Okay.
Okay. So let me hit this other thing, because I think this is important.
Okay, this better be good, Will.
Well, if you try to,
I'm not convinced yet. No, I'm just kidding.
This is a creative way of using school visits. Because if you do, let's say you do a, maybe we should do a podcast on school visits at some point. But if you do a school visit, you can expect to get paid anywhere from $500 to $2,000, depending on how famous you are and how much long you've been doing it and which school you go to. And there's so many factors involved. But it's not easy if you're in the beginning stages to get school visits. Mm-hmm. Here's something creative that if you've read any young adult fiction, you might know who Brandon Mull is, M-U-L-L.
Wait, let me pause right there. And mm-hmm. this is a quick one. Mm-hmm. It's not easy to get paid school visits.
Right.
But if you just said, went to, you know, called all the schools in your county, and just said, hey, I'm an author. I just came out with, or I'm an illustrator. I have a book. I'd love to do a free school visit one afternoon. And here's a sign-up sheet for kids. If they want to buy my book and whatever they want to buy, I will come with that many books in hand. I think that is way more doable than, this might be an option more so if you're self-publishing. But I think that's way more doable than trying to get $2,000 school visit.
Coincidentally, that's what Brandon Mull did.
Oh, is this where you're going?
Yeah, this is where you're going right there. Yeah.
Sorry, man.
That's all right. No.
Stole your thunder.
Busted.
The funny thing is, you will also piss off the authors and illustrators that are charging. So it's funny. If you ask, you'll get a wide variety of opinions on this. I love to be open-minded about things and you know, let market forces dictate, but yeah, like, you know, you talk to authors and illustrators and say, hey, should I offer my service for free? And if they're trying to do school visits that are paid, they'll go, no, don't ever do that. It'll ruin it for everyone else. Well, anyway, Brandon Mull, along with his publisher Shadow Mountain, and this was 7 or 8 years ago, they came up with a great idea to my knowledge, no one had ever done before or heard of. And that was he wrote this series called Fable Haven. And he was on his first book. It wasn't even a series yet. And rather than gamble on whether or not this book will do well, the publisher said, hey, we've got this idea. What if we send you out to schools and we'll help schedule these? And I mentioned this did come from the publisher, but I think this is something that could be done individually or with a husband and wife team. They scheduled school visits back to back on the same day to make it worth going out on the road. They would schedule 4 to 5 school visits a day for free.
Oh man.
For free. And what they said was, you need to be ready at this time. We're going to run over to your school. We're going to do a really fun presentation. It's not a boring one. Here's a video clip of what we do. It's really exciting. We're going to get your kids excited about reading. They're going to love to read this book. Now, when you know, that's what schools are trying to do, is get kids reading. So when you say the right words and say the right, so they got the schools excited, he's going to come in. Then at the end of every presentation, a half an hour presentation, he would say, I'm going to be over here at the Barnes & Noble, and you can get a signed copy of me. Bring your family down, tell your parents to come. And when they first started doing this, the first weeks that they were doing this, they couldn't get Barnes & Noble to actually order enough books. So Barnes & Noble would order a few hundred books, and they're like, that's not enough. We're going to sell out. And they're like, the Barnes & Noble was like, this guy is nobody. This guy does not exist on the map, and you're telling me to order a couple hundred books? No. So they would bring books with them and then somehow get them scanned in, or I don't know how they worked it, but the Barnes & Noble would always run out of books for the first couple of weeks until they would have the former Barnes & Nobles call the next ones and say, this guy's legit, like, listen to him and order 300 or 400 books. And they would have lines around the store for people to come in and get their book signed. And it made his book series a New York Times bestseller overnight. And I happened to be at the the ALA convention meeting with Brandon, because he's a friend of mine. And we were there. The Shadow Mountain publisher sold that book to Scholastic. Or no, I'm sorry, to Simon Schuster. And I was there when Brandon met the big shots at Simon Schuster for the first time. And he recounted the story. They're like, now, how did you do the school visit thing? And he told them the whole story right there in this group of editors. And they're like, man, that is a great idea. We've never even heard of that before. So this Shadow Mountain was a tiny publisher out here in Utah. And so if there's one takeaway I could give in this podcast is I have a list that we can read through of things that other people have done, but just know you're as an artist, you're creative. You're already coming up with original stuff. There's no reason why your marketing ideas can't be original too. And don't get caught up in the mindset of always having to ask, like, how is a book launch done? How is this to be done? You know, where is the list of things I should follow to do a successful book launch? The idea is that you need a big following, and there's a lot of ways that we've talked about on other podcasts, and we talked about today, to get a big following, and you need to get the word out, number two, and then you need to make some sorts of appearances to physically meet with people. How you do that, there are probably thousands of ways to do that, and ways that have never been thought of or done before. And it was neat watching this and being able to witness the big shots at Simon and Schuster going, well, we've never heard of this before, you know? So don't be afraid to be creative.
I like
that.
You
guys are stunned.
Don't be afraid.
I go back to Jake's, because I don't think you can make it work like that. I like all the novelty and all that stuff, but I think you're focusing your efforts online, getting it out to a bunch of people, and then moving on to your next. The cool thing about that is you can do that and move on to your next project at the same time.
For me, I tend to agree. I would not want to gamble out there. I relate that story because it's something that that actually worked. It's mm-hmm. something that someone can say, this is how I became famous. I mean, Brandon can say, this is how I became a famous author.
I think these are the lottery stories, though.
Maybe, but maybe they create, maybe they give people ideas of ways to get their idea out there that are not conventional. I mean, the idea is not being conventional, so.
I mean, that works for sure.
Can I say my list, I guess, my things to think about and work on?
No.
You can say them. Doesn't mean that Lee will agree with them.
I'm trying to disagree today. We talk a big game about disagreeing. We got to actually.
I know. I think I'm siding a little bit more with Lee. I'm kind wow. of between. I'm between my both my parents. Mommy and Daddy are having a fight, and I. But here's the thing. I think you need to be creative, and what Will is saying is go out and do, like, basically grease palms, right? Like you have to individually sell each book by telling a person to do it, whether it's a child or it's a child's parent or something like that. And that can go a long way, because that personal connection is what builds a fan base, right? The thing that I would add to that is anytime you do a book signing, anytime any way that you can, is get the email addresses of teachers that you've worked with, librarians that you've worked with, and parents that are willing to give you that, so that the next time you have a book to come out, you have a list of people who have bought a book and who are already fans of yours, and you can tell them what's coming out, and they're more likely to buy that second book and tell a friend to buy that second book. So I think it's a combination. It's doing the hard work to build a platform and to build a network of people who support you. And so I think the most valuable marketing tool, or the marketing asset that anybody can have today, is a solid email list filled with people who actually want to hear and care about what you have to say. And there's 100 different ways to build that email list, but the reason you want that email list is because you actually own it. People who are willing to give an email, are giving you something of theirs, a way to personally contact them. Everybody every day checks email. They'll do social media, but they'll also check email. I mean, that's a generalization, but email is by far the most used communication device online, right? Mm-hmm. Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, even YouTube, they all have ways of coming between you and the people who've signed up to want to see your stuff. I can post on Instagram and 30% of the people who follow me will actually, it'll actually show up in their feed. Facebook, it's even lower. Twitter, it's such a high traffic, high volume place of content that you can post something on there. And if someone's not timed to be online with that at right, at just the right time, they're going to miss whatever tweets you have. But an email sits in their inbox until they decide to do it. They have to touch it. They either have to archive it or they open it or delete it. You know, they have to do it. And even if they don't open the email, they're seeing that they got something from you. So you're in their mind at some point. And if they haven't unsubscribed, then you're in their mind positively, right? So so I think that is one of the most important things for an author to like to build on, to work with, and to document, like we said, starting 2 years out, to document the process of how I'm making this thing, what I'm working on. And then I think the other thing too is that if you're sitting here thinking, okay, this is how I'm going to market my book, I want you to change that to, this is how I'm going to market my books. And I want you to think, I'm not making a book. I'm going to be doing 5 books or 10 books. Don't put all your faith into just that one idea, because that really is like playing the lottery. You're going to have such a better, more successful career if you think to yourself, I'm coming up with 10 ideas. I'm doing 10 books. I'm doing 20 books. I'm going to take 20 years to do this, you know, or 10 years to do this. And somewhere in year 5 to 10, I think is when that success starts to really escalate to the point where you can have like traction and people really interested in what you're doing, if you're starting from scratch. The other thing is maybe you already have an audience who follows you somewhere else, somehow else. You can bring them over to whatever you're doing here. But I think for most people starting from scratch, it's start building that email list. And it's just as simple as, hey, you know, do you want a monthly update from me or a weekly update from me just to see what I'm working on? A lot of times you can exchange things for an email. Hey, if you want a free copy of, you know, my sketches from this last year, just send me your email address and I'll mail it out to you. And oh, by the way, do you mind getting emails from me? But continue to build that out. And it that email list will outsurvive the MySpaces, the Facebooks, the Instagrams, whatever, you know, whatever comes and goes. You still have that email from them.
That's great.
Can I add a little bit from my list? Lee. Mine's a much smaller, really a lot dumber list than that. I agree with all that stuff that Jake said. I do like the online model, but the one thing that I do want to add is that how I use marketing and book signings and things like that is just as a tax deductible vacation. You can, if you've got products, you can figure out where you want to go in the world, contact the places, the bookstores, the comic shops or whatever that's in that place, and go meet with them and go do a book signing. Then your trip becomes tax deductible and it's an awesome thing. I just did that with a trip. I went to Florida, met with a bunch of galleries down there. Now one of the galleries is carrying my work, and now it's a tax deductible trip every time I go to this place in Florida that I wanted to go anyway. And so that's tip number one. And tip number two is that I am a big fan of the self-publishing stuff now, and I know a lot of you guys are thinking about doing that. The fact that it doesn't become remaindered ever is such a huge bonus. And I'm sure Will and Jake agree with the sketchbooks that Jake's have done and the book that Will did. my book that I did on Kickstarter, I don't know, 3 years ago, I guess now at this point, was still my number one seller last year from my online shop. The hardcover was the first bestseller, and the digital download was the second bestseller out of my entire website. And so it's really awesome in that, and it's never going away. As long as I've got books to sell, and the digital, obviously, copy never goes away, but you know, it'll be there forever. You know, 20 years, people could still get that first book. It doesn't get remaindered, and you're not at the mercy of market forces.
Yeah.
So to wrap up all this, we could give you and we could spend time talking about each little thing you could do marketing wise for your book, like, you know, making a media kit, making press releases, making a book trailer. There's a ton of things on my list. These are all things that you can actually look up online. Like if you Google how to do a book launch, read, you know, the first five articles that you come across, you'll get all these ideas, and then you can deep dive on each one of them if you wanted to on how to do all that. So that's stuff that is kind of standard fare. The bigger thing is, like Jake said, and like Lee said, you know, building your platform. Getting ready to launch a book that I'm not, you know, fully talking about yet, because I want to release it in certain, I have a schedule on how I want to actually release this information. I'm not going to be doing book signings. I'm not going to be doing a book tour, a physical book tour. But I have a lot of these techniques that I'm going to be doing online. And the bigger thing that you need to think about is getting your mindset on the overall picture. Like Jake said, you know, if you're creative and you're going to be creating for a long time, you're in a nutshell, your book launch is one, book launches or product launches over time. And you're probably the number one thing you can do above all the things you would find on these lists is generating your fan base. Because your fans want to buy your product. They can't wait for it to come out. They can't wait for you to release it. They can't wait for you to talk about it. And then they're going to tell their friends and so on and so on. And so that's probably the biggest thing that you can do for a book launch. The biggest answer, which might be disappointing for some people, is start generating that fan base of people that love what you do. So there you go.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's wrap it up. Let's wrap it up. Thanks everybody for joining us here on svslearn.com. No, this is on the 3-point perscat.
Yeah, we're doing so good.
Boy. All right, everybody, thank you for joining us. 3-point perspective is made possible by svslearn.com. I don't know how I messed that up. Svslearn.com is where becoming a great illustrator starts. It's not where everybody who's become a great illustrator has started, but there's a handful of great illustrators out there who started with SVS Learn or joined us along their path and are now working illustrators out there with books on bookshelves in stores and libraries. And we want to help you become that artist as well. That's why we do this podcast. That's why we offer online education, like illustration tutorials and courses that are very affordable. And that's why I think so many people have learned and enjoy what we're doing over there. So check out svslearn.com, sign up now, and see if it's for you. So your hosts today have been Will Terry, Lee White, and Jake Parker. Will Terry can be found at willterry.com. You can also follow him on Instagram at willterryart. Lee White can be found at leewhiteillustration.com, and you can also find his work on Instagram at leewhiteillo. I'm Jake Parker. You can find me at mrjakeparker.com and also on Instagram at Jake Parker. Podcast is edited by Alex Sugg. That's alexsugg.com, and Sugg is with two G's. Podcast produced by Tanner Garlick. You can find his work at tannergarlickart.com. Our podcast is video edited by Daniel Tu, and you can find his work at daniel2.co, and that's T-U, not T-O-O. So it's daniel-tu.co. And production management here at svslearn.com is handled by Aaron Painter, and you can find his work at painterdraws.com. So if you like this episode and you want to share it around, or you want to give us some good feedback, please let us know on the reviews system that the podcast app, your podcast app has. If you haven't subscribed yet, go ahead and subscribe. We'd love that. We want to hear what you guys think about it. And if you're wanting to join in on this particular discussion, we actually have a forum thread devoted to this episode over in the svslearn.com forums. Those are free to join, and we'd love to hear what you think. People chime in all the time, tell us their thoughts, where they disagree with us, where they agree with us, and who they think is the most handsomest here out of the three of us. So that's all, and we'll see you guys next time. Thanks. Bye.